Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you. And good evening, everyone. Welcome to another Tuesday night installment here at Your Remedies in the Law. My name is Martin Michelson. I'll be your host for this evening's conference call brought to you by Your Remedies in the Law, which is in direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer. Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you're on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very politely ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone looking for legal advice has no place or business here on any of these calls. Nobody here at Your Remedies in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, our advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes, just folks saying what they might do were they similarly situated to you, people's opinions. However thoughtful, educated, and experienced as these opinions might be, at the end of the day, they are just still people's opinions. And it is always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. If I can take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com. We look up in the upper right-hand corner. We see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that. You'll have a separate page come up with just two items on it. These two items are of much importance, especially if this is all new to you. First on the left is the jurisdictionary course. That is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure, better known to some as American jurisprudence or AMJUR. Rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firmer and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic concept of what's going on in virtually any court scenario you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, mostly known for its national 85% win rate in most traffic cases throughout the country. And that is vastly the majority of the reason why it's purchased. But that's actually why it's not why it's up here. The reason why it's up here, once you've gone through jurisdictionary a couple times and you get into the common law default, you'll start to see very quickly that it acts as a real-life homework assignment. Most of the key pillars that you're learning about in jurisdictionary, you're now acting out in a real-life scenario with the common law default. That coupled with its immense win rate and the fact that traffic cases are usually the first that people go for because they're the least impacting, the least stressful of all the court scenarios for the most part, folks find it a little more palatable to dip their toe in the water the first time with the common law default process. Both of these items are very affordably priced, asking just a small contribution of $250 for the jurisdictionary and $150 for the common law default. All right, we're back out of that. Now we're back to the homepage of yourremediesinthelaw.com. You can log in and register there. That reminds us to remind you to get your online account today. Also very affordably priced, $10 a month. Be done automatic through your credit card or your PayPal. That gives you full access to the site, all the wonderful features there. It gives you full phone numbers and pins for all the calls, as well archives to all the previous calls, years and years of knowledge, untold vast wealth of knowledge and experience. If that's not an option for you just yet, there is freedomsradio.com, never a charge to use Freedoms Radio. The call is broadcasted out every night in its entirety. There's even a little question bar there where you can type in a question or a comment, click submit. We read those out over the air. And so you get some limited interaction with the speaker for that evening. Not anywhere near on the level of having the membership, but you don't have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right, on to the next subject. Most of you probably noticed on virtually every website that we have that map of the United States. That is Grass Fire Communications, formerly known as Statewide Communications, also 100% free to use. It's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict, pre-decided topics of discussion. So you've got a very easy setup wizard, put your name in here, click next, that sort of thing. Somewhere in the middle, it asks you to pick a list of topics. From a list of topics, you can pick more than one. These topics range anything from status change to IRS matters, home foreclosure, credit card issues, veterans' rights, health rights, anything you can think of. You can think of it as in that list. And then lastly, we're towards the end. It'll ask you to choose a radius. We're looking for citywide, countywide, statewide, somewhere in the middle. And when it's done, it puts it together much how a lot of people would describe a social media. So nothing like a social media. It's very customers, very private. But a lot of folks would describe a social media. It's going to put you in contact with people there in your local area that have the same interests as you. The idea is you jump on there one day and you say, this happened to me today. The first few people in and say, oh, I don't think they should be able to do that. That's what's wrong with this country. I don't think that's fair. Those might be accurate statements, but it's probably not going to be very much assistance to you. It's not going to help you a lot in learning what to do, how to help yourself. Maybe the next person comes in and says, yeah, those are all definitely true statements. So I'll tell you what I would do if I was similarly situated. I'd go down to the local county courthouse. By the way, if you didn't know, every county's got a courthouse. Every courthouse has a law library. You're the taxpayer. I'd look up these terms. That'd give me a lot more of an idea of what I'm going to be dealing with. And then I'd watch this YouTube video. Now we're starting to get somewhere. Maybe the next person says, all that's great. I agree with 100% of it. And also, I'd go to this particular website. I'd check out this educational package. Well, you see where I'm going with this. The idea is to put the power of communication, the power of education back in the hands of the common man. Once you've learned how to do your own due diligence, and you've learned how to educate yourself and look things up, now you're handling your own affairs, your own matters. There's nothing illegal or unlawful or immoral or anything about that. And that's something that pretty much we can all agree on. So we encourage you to check out Gratified Communications. Also, every time you go to the homepage of your remedy, you're met with that little blue box that pops up. Ask you if you want to continue on or stay and check out America's Restoring America. The reason we've done this is that we're trying to get folks to explore. Too often we hear, I wish I'd known about this. I wish I'd heard about that. So we put that up there to show that there's a lot for you to check out. Your remedy has grown considerably in size. A lot of new information providers. And then, you know, everything that's at your remedy, new and old. Your remedy is just one of a dozen and a half websites that all together make up Americans Restoring America. So odds are it's probably some things you've missed. So we're putting that up there as a reminder for everybody at your leisure to check out what else is there. All right, so this next portion we call your caveat emptor or your buyer beware. Come aboard with an information provider. Go through, you know, start an educational package. You're doing just that. You're going directly, coming aboard directly with that information provider. Now, these info providers pay for advertising at your remedy. This would be a cost to that info provider along with any other costs associated with your educational package or whatever your endeavor might be. And so that brings it to a bigger question. What is the refund policy or the credit policy like at your remedy? Well, there is none. There is none. If you're purchasing something small like a book, it's one and done. If you're if you have a problem with an information provider or something with your educational package, that would be a private conversation between you and your information provider. And then even then, that's very few and far between. Must be extenuating circumstances. You are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any info provider's time or any educational process. All right, I guess lastly here, I want to remind you that everybody, for all of our speakers, everybody that you hear on these calls, these speakers are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's perfectly fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always be civil. Besides, if the question is posed properly, answered properly, and then we can all learn something from it. More effective gotten, if you have a question on whether we have an information provider that could be able to assist you, you can email me directly, mm@youremediesinthelaw.com, or you can call the 1-800 number, 1-800-625-4250. That is my ramble, Mr. Edward. So I'm trying to turn the call back over to you, and you can introduce our speaker host here.
Well, thank you so very much, Martin. I appreciate that. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight, we are blessed to have Brother John return. He's had several ordeals to go through. I had some students that really needed some focused attention, which has been taken care of. Tonight, I hope that we will continue with, as the stomach churns, the weekly saga, bringing you up to date on Mr. T and how, having corrected his political citizenship status, how dealing with attorneys forced upon him and other issues are going to be dealt with. We're going to hear from Brother John tonight, prayerfully, on that. So here he is. Without further ado, it's my pleasure to turn this call over to Brother John.
Good evening, Martin. Good evening, Michael. Thank you for your very, very kind and gracious introductions. You're both very much appreciated. Yeah, I apologize. I've been kind of in and out of pocket, had a little few character building exercises. My I've been and out of a few funerals, and my father passed away, and talk about other character building exercises. But you know, the antithesis of life is that we have character building exercises. And for those of you who consider yourselves God-fearing men and women, I have great respect for all of you. I've been around long enough and seen enough of the what transpires on this ball field to know that there is an intelligent designer out there, an all-powerful entity. And however you choose to regard that all-powerful entity, whether it's God, E.T., space, alien, spirit, beings, Jesus, Yeshua, whatever, Muhammad, however you choose to address that. Muhammad was a prophet talking about the entity. But however you choose to address that, that entity is out there. And I lovingly like to call him the head coach. And to that end, the coach in this ball game, if you're any good at what you're doing, he's going to have you on the playing field, and not just visiting it, for one inning or for one quarter or just because the ball's on this side of the 50. If you're good at what you do, he is going to take you out and utilize you. Any coach worth his salt would do that. And what that means is that also, when you're not on the ball field, the coach, he recognizes talent and ability. And if you've got skills and you've been blessed with talents and et cetera, even when you're not on the ball field, he'll have you in the gym, pumping iron. So to that end, sometimes, he may take you off the field, put you in the gym for a little bit, and then run a special play just so that he can accomplish something. And maybe it's just to get that fourth down, and that he desperately, that the coach desperately would like to have for, so they can, continue to carry the, move the ball for yardage. And every one of those, events, whether you're on the field, whether you're in the gym or whatever, constitutes, the donation of sweat, sometimes blood and even tissue samples, And so, if you're doing any good for him, and I promise you, if you're carrying that ball for any yardage or doing anything upright, the opposing team's going to be all over you like white on rice, trying to fold, spindle, mutilate, rub you out like a cigar butt in the AstroTurf. But if you're sitting in the end zone, laying in a Chase lounge chair, sucking on a lemonade cooler, reading the sports page, the away coach may do something really rude to you, like send a over with a fresh pitcher of lemonade in the latest sports page. Because if you're not making any yardage, you're not even helping move the ball for yardage, the away coach loves you. And, as people talk about, your wife is too busy and too hard. You got too many character building exercises and trials. There must be something wrong with you. Not actually quite the opposite. It might even be a backhanded compliment that you've got character building exercises on your hands. And to that end, this coach talks about retirement, when those last few seconds, count down and we take that ball for the conversion. And, take those extra points with us. The retirement that this coach talks about, the long-term requirement, the benefits are out of this world. And the comfortable debentures that he has for you, sick 'em doggy. Oh, holy broken tree feathers, Batman. It's hard to even imagine when he talks about streets of gold so pure that you can see through it. And that's the pavement. That's what you walk on. When you're going through trials, sometimes the father lets Satan or the bad guy have his way. And there's even stories about a guy named Job that He says, you know, all of a sudden Satan comes wandering through the court and King says, hey, paraphrase, hey, Satan dude, how's it been hanging? Where you been? What do you mean? I've been roaming the earth seeking who I can corrupt or devour, you know? And he says, well, have you considered my servant Job, you know? And the guy says, you know, and Satan paraphrases, yeah, but your strong hand of protection's on him. But take your hand away and buddy, he'll tell you where to go. You can kind of see the king cup in one hand, scratching his head on the other, with the other hands going, I don't think so, but what you got in mind? There's a whole bunch of dialogue missing there, but you can tell there was a whole lot of dialogue because all of a sudden the king says, okay, go for it. But two caveats. You can't touch his wife and you can't kill him. And most of you know the story that crummy, unkind, bad guy, he went every lock of wool off of every flock, every hoof of every herd, every toothpick of every building or helm, and every stone of all of his buildings, and every last strand of posterity of DNA was erased. This man was not a cheese wheat. He was a very wealthy man and not just had children, but grandchildren. Everything got erased. It was down to just him and his bride. And at one point, his bride was so choked up about how much pain, you know, because Hasatan went and, you know, covered his body with boils and inflicted him with all kinds of open sores. And poor Job was just suffering. And his wife says, you know, you should just go ahead and give up and die. She said, curse God and die. He said, nope, naked I came in this world, naked I'll leave. Praise be the Most High King, that intelligent designer. And what we're finding out with Mr. T right now is Mr. T is going through a character building exercise for some reason. And you only get character building exercises for two reasons. One, you screwed up. You work for it, you earned it, and you deserve it. And buckle up, Spanky. This one's coming from downtown. And there's the other one where the master craftsman is chiseling away that diamond. Ouch! You know, and he's got that chisel and that hammer, and bang, bang, kank, crack, ow, ow, that hurt. Why'd that have to go? Or he's out pruning the branches. Wait a minute, that branch had some good leaves on it. Wait a minute, that one had some olives. Ouch, stop it! You know? But the master craftsman continuing that mighty work in your life. To that end, we're realizing that a whole bunch of things that are happening to Mr. T right now are turning us around and guiding us toward the right way to handle things that, some of them, we've had some evil, some very unkindness revealed, that's coming from all the way up from the bench and the prosecutor they're not letting one drop of one inch of space, you know, for him to have any grace or to be able to move forward. And what we are learning is that as Mr. T, it begins to deal with, his situation and, those around him, he's been turning, I guess you could say he's starting to get into the prison ministry. And some of the things that were so horrible right off the bat aren't quite so horrible anymore. He's able to put up with them. And, from personal experience, I've been stopped and got an invitation to Club Fed and, you know, and personally, you know, and I spent time, at the Gray Bar Hotel, Club Fed, or whatever you want to call it. And I ended up feeling like I was in the prison ministry. And when the last person that I had to be an example to got ministered to, all of a sudden, on one of the occasions, there were three sheriffs, deputies standing in the doorway saying, what are you doing here? why are you here? I says, well, guys, that's a good question. I'm glad you asked. I was kind of hoping maybe you guys could help me with that one. And they says, why do you put up with this? My deputy here kicked in your ribs. You've got, you know, you're bleeding from your ribs. And I said, how did you know that? He says, it soaks. Blood has a nasty habit of soaking through clothing. And, you know, and I had a bad case of double pneumonia, and this young female deputy was overly thoughtful and pleasant, and racked me up the backside with her baton, and I was asking if I could get my inhaler because I was kind of going into a little bit of a difficulty there where I desperately needed a little albuterol, you know, and she knocked me down and, you know, was kicking me in the ribs saying, get up, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And I was borderline conscious. It was at the point where I still knew she was kicking me. And, oh, boy, did it hurt. But the pain was so bad I couldn't see anymore. And finally, when it came time, and that was just in the inlet cell, when it came time to processing, you know, I stood up straight, and when I came in, they, you know, and I treated her with respect, and the sergeant, you know, this little 5'7" blonde hair, blue-eyed, 135-pound package of dynamite wrapped this guy next to me over the head with her baton and his legs, and the sheriff, the sergeant, he says, look at this. This guy, look at him. His clothing, he's got blood on his clothing. He's been leaking, he's been bleeding, you know, and he didn't say leaking hydraulic fluid. I did, but he says, and look at the respect he's paying. You all shape up and follow this guy. Well, 4.5, almost 5 hours later, that particular gentleman, that deputy that kicked in my ribs, and I had some broken ribs and cracked ribs from it, and her steel-toed tennies, you know, that she was wearing. But they treated me with the most unbelievable respect and kindness. I had considered that for the overly thoughtfulness that was being dished out there, that a couple of these deputies might get served with a civil complaint under 42 U.S.C. 1983. But these ones cleaned up, and I was told that by a sheriff deputy that I would see in court 2.5 years later while being their amicus curiae for another person. He come up to me and he says, I didn't know you were an attorney. I says, I'm not. I says, you know, and he says, what do you mean? He said, and I laughed and I says, well, the guy became an attorney, really. I says, I didn't even know he was sick, you know, and the deputy started laughing. He says, you realize that over the jail there, an inlet has never been the same since you were there. And he asked me about some of the components to our arrest. Actually, we were on a stakeout for a kidnapping case, that the, sheriff didn't, have the, or the constable didn't have, the manpower for. The precinct four constable in, Harris County here was a personal friend, close personal friend. And, Sheriff Tommy, he and I, we sat in committee together at the Republican state conventions. And we were in the rules committee and, together, and we always sat side by side, you know, I realized that this was a place where some good things were happening, and I took a beating, you know, and like the old, they talk about the watch that takes a licking and keeps on ticking. Well, I tried to do that. All of a sudden, you know, without explaining all this to Mr. T, all of a sudden he's becoming more and more pleasant and, considerate, and, they are treating him with dignity and respect. And the last time I called to talk to the warden, he says, are you the guy that was, the judge won't let represent Mr. T? And I says, how do you know about that? He says, are you kidding? Mr. T, everybody knows him in this federal penitentiary. And, he's a different kind of citizen. And we're watching to see what happens and what you can do. And to that end, the fact that Mr. T, the gavel that's in on this particular case, has, not just once, but twice refused to, allow me to, under the Sixth Amendment, appear with him to assist him. I'm not going to represent him. I'm not going to represent anybody else. And I don't believe that that's correct or right for anybody to do that, because when you abdicate your rights to somebody else, they can do whatever they want to. And especially when that person already has a blood oath to the bench and to the court, as they, when he swore his oath, when he was accepted into the bar, that oath, they, when to violate that, is very, very serious. And when that person comes up with something that's in controversy, and they have the least suspicion, least little bit of suspicion that, magistrate or the gown or the gavel may not, agree with the direction you're wanting to go, or that the defendant wants to go, they'll go the other way. And you've already paid them their money. They don't have a carrot waiting for them, you know, and because when you get low on your retainer, they make you pay up front. And so, what happens is that the contentions that, of ill and wrongdoing that may occur in that court are all just quietly and surreptitiously ignored in favor of the bench and every other member of every other officer of that court. So you have to be extremely careful. Mr. T, they won't even allow him to submit a typed in document right now. And actually we have a meeting with the public defender tomorrow morning, at 8 o'clock sharp, or 8:01. And, we're working on educating this public defender on the errors of his way. And while we have no intention of, you know, like what the Cassius Clay or Muhammad Ali said, you know, he says, you never, ever, ever telegraph your punch. He says, when you learn to box, half of boxing is learning how not to telegraph your intentions, so that whatever you do send along has power and effect. Okay. But we're not going to tell them one drop that we are, presently we're preparing criminal and civil indictments, against them. And Mr. T, I'll admit it. It may be shaping up into one heck of an income opportunity. And, the folks in the state that are detaining him don't have the homestead laws that some other states have. And, I think the model homestead law is here in Texas, where because lien levy your judgment, they cannot come after, your home. It's called the widow law. And what happened was that, it's against state law to, you cannot re-encumber a home once you've paid off, even one nickel of your debt. On your note, you're not allowed to re-encumber it, and others cannot take it, be a lien or levy or judicial foreclosure. To date, the only thing that's pierced that, and it's not everyone has pierced that, but the IRS. There's three that I know of where the judge says, I'm sorry, Mr. Federal IRS man, And Mr. Federal Prosecutor, we have a law here. This is, oh, I'm sorry, the Fed trumps the state. Ours over. No, it does not. And I watched the judge literally bang his gavel three times until the fine, very attractive looking federal prosecutor that she would be found in contempt of court if she bought up trying to go after their house one more time. And that he told her, he says, it may take me a while to decide what to do with you. He called her honey. He says, but it may take weeks or months. But in the meantime, there is no statute of limitations and there's no time bar on contempt of court. And I will find you in that. And she whined and moaned and complained and finally, when he says, you know, bailiff, would you escort the, she says, I'm sorry, Your Honor, I apologize, you know, and he says, I'm glad you see it my way. Besides, my bailiff's jail already is at its occupancy right now. I didn't want to have to arrest you, but, you know, have you detained. But he got up, he leaned over and held his gavel in the air and says, but honey, you say one more thing and I will slap this gavel. And if you do anything other than come quietly like a lamb, that bailiff will slap you silly. You know, and there was a hush and then a groan in the courtroom. And he says, you find some assets if you want to see some assets for this. But at that particular juncture, we hadn't yet proven that jurisdiction, that this individual was a taxpayer. It's very, very important to always keep your calm and your demeanor very, very positive. When Mr. T was posed with his most recent challenges, the judge, out of rudeness, changed his next hearing date, moved it up a whole week so that he doesn't have time to submit any response by mail for the unkindness, because right now the only responses that are being accepted are from him personally, and he submitted a release of counsel recently, and the attorney that's says he's going to represent him, is moving for a trial date into December because he has two capital murder trials ahead of him. But so far, this gentleman has done nothing to indicate any form of defense or even wise guidance or counsel. Now, if you were in a situation like him where technically they like to believe that they have immunity and they've already been paid, how would you handle response to that attorney? And this attorney, although he's supposed to be a public defender, one of the cellmates that's two cells over indicated that he had this exact public defender before, and that he ended up getting a bill. I don't know any of the further details on that, but apparently this gentleman has sent a bill for his services when he was supposed to be donating them. And so, Mr. T, we talked about previously that he had made a mistake in accepting at the judge's pressure the public defender. Okay, the thing that's really very, very, very important is that you remain responsible for your own defense. Do not abdicate your responsibilities for your defense to somebody else. There are individuals that you know, it's like the look at the homeschool movement. there are individuals that they abdicate their parental responsibilities in the raising of their child to the state by submitting and sending them to public schools, where the agenda you almost have to pull hen's teeth to find out what the program is and the curriculum, let alone the goals of that particular school district. And they and most of those school districts, they it's tough. You don't have any clue. There's no affirmation of character of any one of the individuals that might be teaching your sons or daughters or your grandsons or granddaughters or great-grandsons or great-granddaughters. And all of a sudden, you know, your kids come home and they act, they have an outburst and they act inappropriately, and you all of a sudden decide to start parenting. Well, their parents are Axl Rose and Madonna. You kind of missed that along the way. It's the same way in court. You abdicate your responsibility to somebody else. They'll take the money, do it the way that they feel is the best, and then leave you withstanding with what is left over. And sometimes what is left over, and I was personally present for two separate events where the prosecutor and the attorney that was representing the defendant, I overheard this myself personally, where they traded a conviction for a lose for a win in the future. And hold on a second. My humble apologies. My throat was getting a little dry there. And so what happens is that your case sometimes gets baited and debated and traded off for something that you never would have expected in your wildest expectations and never should have been rightly done that. But because you signed that attorney-client privilege commitment there, contract, you have zero say-so. And under Feretta versus California in 1975, you can claim ineffectiveness of counsel, but now it's getting harder and harder to claim that. So what you need to do is pay attention to your case or your friend's case or whoever, families or whoever it is, and make certain that no matter how it slices out, that you you're on top of it the whole time, and that if you do acquire, and I'll use that word, acquire assistance of counsel, you're not turning your case, you're not over to this individual, they're not fully representing you, they are your assistants, they are co-counsel, you know, and that's what they are. They are additional guidance and counsel. They do not make the decisions. What happens is that they have the power to barter and change out whoever you want, or barter your life for someone else's. So it's very important to be absolutely and strictly careful on this. Now, when somebody colors outside the lines, you need to leave, you need to, in the movie industry, they call it hanging out a lantern, where you, you have a TV show, where sometime in the future, you're going to come back to this point and you talk about their long lost mother or mother-in-law or something. But, in the legal industry, you have to enter into the record the points that they are wrongfully proceeding on. Like if you, right now, Mr. T, the judge, the moment we've the moment the public defender was assigned, the judge dismissed and ruled against every motion that was on the record waiting that had been submitted by Mr. Teeth without any findings of facts or conclusions of law. Okay? There was zero. He just ruled against and dismissed them all summarily that day. And there is a handful. Mr. T is now handwriting and resubmitting all those so that they are technically in the record and have not, we're demanding findings of fact and conclusions of law. They, and remember, an attorney cannot, submit testimony or evidence into the record themselves. They have to elicit testimony and evidence. And to date, the prosecutors have been very, very silent. We've seen this multiple times now where individuals are in a federal criminal case and the prosecutor just remains silent while the bench rules in their favor without saying a thing. That is illegal and it's unconstitutional. And what's happened is very important is that an appeal that, that on a case that happened 4 years ago, four and a half, actually it's almost 5 years ago now, because that was in, the end of 17, finished up in February 18th. So it's actually over 5 years ago now. We, filed an amicus brief and they say that the judiciary has judicial immunity and the prosecutor has prosecutorial immunity, meaning they can even withhold exculpatory evidence and not be held liable for that. And there's a judge in Cleveland that 12 years ago made the landmark decision. Is a U.S. District Court judge. He's just about to retire. A lot of other judges, hail to, and they just go in on their own. And, a very, very sweet 63-year-old widow in, Pensacola, Florida made a comment before a female magistrate, and she says, "I'm sorry, honey." The magistrate says, "I'm sorry, honey, but you can't prosecute us. We have judicial." She said, "So you can violate the law, sweep away my rights, and if I try to defend myself, you know, you're just going to sweep it away anyway." She says, "Honey, I have your life in my hand." She says, "Well, then, you know, then killing you and your whole family and every judge in this place is for free because you're going to come after me if I, if I try to stand up for my rights." The judge was so, first she demanded that the, that Carla be taken into custody and treated with contempt. And, that was a threat to the judge. And, as the bailiff was trying to put the cuffs on, I should leave the name out. As she was putting the handcuffs on her, a federal marshal put his hand on the bailiff's shoulder and says, "You're illegally doing what you're doing right now. Now, do you want to just go back, and sit down?" And the judge demanded to know what was going on. And he says, "Otherwise, do I have to shoot you for resisting arrest?" And the federal marshal made it very, very clear to the bailiff that he wasn't going to allow that. The magistrate immediately bolted from the bench only to find that there was another federal marshal standing in the hallway right behind the door to get off the bench. And he would not let her out. He says, "Look, this is illegal and unconstitutional. What you're doing, the marshal, he, he said that he was going to let the judge off on it, and she, but he didn't want to push it too far. But what happened was is the judge didn't come in the next day. The judge retired, and she took what we call retirement plans Charlie, meaning she took what tenure she had, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and she, within 3 days, was residing in a non-extradition country. Okay? Now, what's happening is that things like this that occur, we're finding less and less federal marshals that are willing to stand up for the rights of the individual. Right now, I'm having a tough time. I've got two, we call them John Waynes, that they're both in their 80s now. One's about to turn 90, and they're looking for young federal marshals that proceeded forth in their manner instead. And they said that they're having a tough time. Right now, one of the things that's happening is that, you know, when you moonlight, and, you know, it's like the officer or the deputy or the constable that you go to the supermarket or the Super K or the Walmart, and they're standing there in the entrance, you know, just kind of playing security guard. They're allowed to moonlight, so are federal marshals. But now there's something, is a policy that the federal marshals can't, they're keeping them within the jurisdiction of the state where they're currently assigned. And we had a gentleman that was a political challenge after the last election. And he was holed up in Cape Verde in the Atlantic there, and we had two John Waynes on a G4 that flew out there to go bring this gentleman home. Well, they're putting a stop to that. They're putting a very, very serious damper on that, and it's quite insidious evil, but this is under the policy of overtime that and travel time. You cannot use you cannot have overtime on travel time anymore on some of these and they have a very, very specific list, but you can see that it keeps, if you know a John Wayne in Pennsylvania, he can't fly out to Arizona and go sit in the courtroom for you. So finding somebody that is willing to stand for what's correct and right, no matter what. One of the John Waynes that we know, Joel, he says, John, if the watch commander broke the rules, I would arrest him. You know, and I says, your watch commander? He says, oh yeah, he used some colorful metaphors, but I don't give a hoot, I'll use that word. That he was going to, he says, I'm too old to turn back. And he says, if they want to get into it with me, he says, I'm not a bad shot. And he says, and, if somebody's resisting arrest against my watch commander, I will shoot them. You know, and those guys are hard to find, and they're getting harder to find. What we need to do is have a situation where there's public opinion. Oh, wait a minute. We can't have public opinion right now because they're after the COVID-19, we've got everybody appearing via Zoom calls now. But what's happening is that in the Constitution, it makes it very clear that those trials are supposed to be public. They are required to be public. Okay? So what's happening is that when we're realizing that all of a sudden, there's one of the things that that occurred with the COVID-19 thing is that these trials that should have been held publicly are no longer being held publicly, and so what's happening is that We're finding out that the the Sixth Amendment. It says in all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district in which the crime shall have been committed, in which district shall have been previously ascertained by law. And all of you know the rest of it. And to be informed of the nature of the cause and accusation, to be confronted with witnesses against them, and have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses' favor, and have the assistance of counsel for his defense. Now, it doesn't say somebody representing you. It says assistance of counsel. And this is the issue where we're currently, rewrote Mr. T's entry of appearance, and it's a joint entry of appearance where he is saying, look, I want this person to assist me, and I want the court to recognize this entry of appearance. And to that end, it's the defendant's perception that the Sixth Amendment is equal and parallel in authority to, in this case, Article 3 of the Constitution. In Article 3, Section 1, it is where the judiciary gets their legal support and their legal authority to hear a case. Now, if they say that this person can't have Sixth Amendment counsel or their own choice, that they must be represented by a member of the bar and an attorney that's been admitted to their little club. Does that sound like a deprivation of rights under color of law? And remember, when we talk about the word deprivation of rights under color of law, we never, ever, ever use the word civil. That has gotten too many people that had the correct pleading, had everything ready to go. They've their pleadings have been overturned or ignored. And so what happens is that the rights don't ever use the word civil. And there are some of the online reference sources that when you quote 18 U.S.C. 241 or 242 or 42 U.S.C. 1983, they use the word civil in there. Please, please, please do not use that. Hold on a second. I'm going to get something to drink. These are your employees you're working with. Do not allow them to get away with anything that they shouldn't. And they will get away with whatever employees like this will get away with anything that their employer will let them get away with. That case up in Cleveland, that was 4 years ago, the brief was rewritten, and we finally got the conviction overturned 3 weeks ago, and but the gentleman hasn't been, neither he or his wife have been released from prison yet. But the thing is that we got bought in on the back end of that, where it was the thing had been going for case had not only been going for a long time, but had come and gone, and even the they had exhausted the appeals, and by the time I had heard about it, the appeal and the deadline for appeals had been exhausted for more than a year and 2 months. So, with that one, we're quietly working on the possibility that we might submit the prosecution and the bench to a civil suit for under 42 U.S.C. 1983, And there's actually, well, I did the brief. They have someone else that is not vaguely unsimilar to myself, but that he's agreed to take that through the steps to help this couple get their some damages because they took everything. They took their house, everything. They had three children. All the children had children. They had grandchildren. And what happened was that the gentleman's business was when they got arrested, floundered and failed. They were trying to sell it, and the feds put a lien against it and took everything. And it's a right now we've got what it takes to get a civil judgment against these individuals. And that one, while the assets that were seized and everything else was over $1.7 million, with trouble damages and not just compensatory damages, but with trouble damages, and punitive damages, it looks like we could probably make easily $8 to $12 million case out of that. And when you're working on your case, however you slice it out, these, like they talk about in the movie industry, hanging out a lantern so that you can look back from one of the future episodes and come back to it and say, hey, in this episode of As the Stomach Turns, this was filed with the court, and so that they not only can come back and get their hands slapped by the appellate court, and remember, a lot of the appellate courts, you have to do this. Yeah, you need some familiarity with that individual appellate court so that they know how it was how it happened, and you know how they think and what they're willing to work with and what they're not willing to work with. Remember, these appellate judges are your elected officials. So what's is very, very important that you learn about them in advance. If you're submitting a brief, learn what you can about the individual so that you know whether they do stand up for character or stand up for what's right, or if they are the type of individual that will slap somebody's hand because they color outside the lines. The issue with Mr. T right now is that we're looking at every single opportunity to file a suit for civil damages, and to do that, we're gonna have to do something that's isn't easy, but we're gonna have to pierce the judge's judicial immunity and show that he violated his oath of office and prove that he was not legally allowed to be a judge, and therefore has no protection, no immunity. There's a whole bunch more down that path that we at the Your Remedies in the Law are working on. In fact, we're actually almost, it's unbelievable. The fields are ripe for harvest, and so going after damages is a really, really one potentially good and wonderful thing. And with that, my time is coming to a close here. As we go to Q&A, if you can stay to the subject matter topic, that would be greatly appreciated. You are not required to. As Martin mentioned in what he called his usual ramble, you know, that the information providers are due some worthy respect, etc. I'm going to tell you, I'm going to share with you a caveat with that. Every man is my teacher and woman, that I might learn from them. Every man and every woman is my superior, that I might learn from them. If you have a disagreement with something that, or you don't see something that I say as being correct or could use improvement, I prefer that, you know, you come to me quietly, you know, call Michael up and make an appointment. But you know what? If you think that it's something very critical and needs to be brought up in public, it's my honor and privilege to respond to your point of consideration. And, I will do my best to always respond to that. With that, back to you, Martin and Michael. Thank you.
All right, folks, now is the time for questions and answers. Star 2 on your keypad if you have a question. That's everybody on the call with us. Press star 2 at this time to raise your hand. If you're listening on the Freedoms Radio side, type your questions in the question bar at this time and click submit. And, of course, if we don't have a lot of questions pop up right away, we will usually shut it down. So don't hesitate, especially tonight, folks. Let's go ahead and get those questions or comments in early on, or we will end up having a short call. We don't like those. That was good to hear.
Go ahead.
It was really good to hear your voice. We missed you last week.
By the way, for those of you who when you do your estate planning and everything else in your retirement planning, think about also that you may want to talk to Michael about planning, doing what it takes to prepare for possibly getting stopped in a traffic stop or detention, detained for a civil or criminal issue, especially like the Treasury Department. Those classes are just that. They're tutored, they're one-on-one, and they're set up just to match you as an individual. But and if you would like that personal planning, et cetera, to help prevent, if Mr. T had a little bit of pre-planning, and this is something that we've known about for years, a little bit of pre-planning, but we haven't really had the time to offer that per se just because of the workload. But as we're starting to be able to offer it, if you want to take advantage of that, please check with Michael.
All right. Well, surprisingly enough, we still have questions pop up. We've got a very good crowd, so I guess we're going to have a short night. I know you've got tons to do. So, okay, Bruce here in Texas, go ahead.
Hey, thanks. Question for you on the estate planning you were just talking about. I have an acquaintance that has a heart problem, could drop in 5 minutes, could last 5 years or more. I have assisted him, and I'm not an attorney, but have done some estate planning in the past, and we walk through his, what he calls a death book, of who gets what, who does what, and wanting to leave his children. He's in his 60s. His children are 20 to 30, and he was trying to leave things in a manner that they just got a pile of cash, so much up front, and then a tiny bit over the years based on 5 or 10% of what they made that year on their own, and they didn't get any significant money until they were in their 60s. And I said, I don't agree with that, but it's your kids. You do what you want to do. And his estate is quite large. So any comments or questions on something like that and any suggestions?
That's a good question. And when I commented about estate planning, you know, I'm also very much talking about asset protection. To that end, Justice Breshears is an unbelievably excellent resource for setting up protection for your assets. But
and that's the Saturday call.
Pardon? Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Okay. That's the Saturday call. And life protection. And when I made that statement a little while ago, I said for those of you who do estate planning and you know and plan for your family and et cetera, what's really important that something that people overlook quite commonly is that they overlook being prepared for unexpected other befallments, including like getting stopped in a traffic stop and being charged with a criminal act having a traffic accident and then being found liable for somebody else's injuries, all of that so that your children don't have to watch their potential inheritance, all of that which you struggled all your life
right.
to prepare for them. Justice Breshears is extremely good at I like to work with Justice Breshears on that myself.
Okay.
When we have those, so that what happens is that we take a multi-pronged effort at making you as much as possible immune to lien, levy, or asset for seizure or foreclosure. Okay.
Right.
And to that end, what happens is that having it so that the children do have some, most especially the bride, you want to make sure that she has some legitimate expectation of some protection, so that you know if somebody stumbles and falls on in your driveway because you just hosed it down, that her home isn't going to go away. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
It's a yes. If you get with Michael, he will set up a conference call where we can work with filling in the gaps on the legal and setting up the asset protection so that no matter how it shakes out, that even at the time of where you go to be to your reward in heaven, that you don't suffer a tremendous loss of all of that which you worked so hard to prepare for your children.
Okay. Cool.
Right.
Right. Is that you, Martin or Michael?
We'll see you back there for the Saturday. Thank you, Bruce. All right. That's going to take care of us for this evening. Thank you so much, Brother John. So good to hear your voice again, and we'll talk to you again next week. Oh, real quick here on the Freedoms Radio side. Karen in Omaha writes in, don't have any questions. Just want to thank everyone for these calls. I'm learning from listening. And just want you to know that the people out there appreciate it. Thank you so much, Karen. Thank you. And thank you, Brother John. We'll see you next week.
Father's blessings be upon you all. Good evening.
All right. All right, folks, that's going to take care of us. Join us again tomorrow night, same time, same place. We'll be having our normal Wednesday night call with Eric Slevin, talking about LLCs. And then, of course, we'll be back Thursday with the pre-recorded call for home foreclosure prevention. And then Friday, of course, our religious call. I welcome you to join us for that. Also, a religious call on Saturdays and Saturday night. We're back here with Justice Breshears
talking about those charitable religious trusts, corporate souls, private interest foundations, things like that. So until next time, everyone have a pleasant rest of your evening and be well.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.